You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor. Really glad to have with me once again Alistair McLeod, probably one of the most frequent guests on this show because I always enjoy having him so much. His insights are always, I think, so fitting with what's going on in the market and very helpful to me. And so I trust and I know from comments I've received that he's very helpful to those of you listening to him on a regular basis. Thanks for joining me again, Alistair.
That's my pleasure, Jay.
It's really good to have you always with me. It's always good to have you with me. And I'd say goldmoney.com is where our people should go to catch up with your weekly essays. You put them out every Thursday. They're always very, very important. And the one I'd like to focus on was, I think, January 8th. Don't dismiss gold and silver. You know, it's almost as if Bitcoin is now the new gold and silver. And it's all the rage, it seems. I haven't checked on it the last couple of days or so. So I want to get into the Bitcoin issue and compare it with gold and or silver, gold especially. But you started out your January 8th letter by saying, and I quote, "There is worrying evidence that 2021 will see the end of fiat currencies led by the U.S. dollar. U.S. dollar money supply has accelerated at an extraordinary rate and process that will continue," end of quotes. And, you know, Alistair, the argument for massive quantitative easing is well understood, I think, which is why investors are seeking to exit the dollar, whether they think of it in those terms or not. That's what they're doing when they're buying Bitcoin or they're buying commodities or they're buying, even just buying stocks might, you know, be a way to exit the dollar. If everything is going up because there's more and more dollars bidding all manner of assets up. But what about the argument that says at some point the Fed will have to reverse course because if the dollar goes to zero, the American empire will be destroyed? And, you know, one of my listeners suggests that, after all, the Fed is here to serve the empire. And so won't there come a time in which they're going to have to just slam on the brakes like Paul Volcker did in 1980 and save the empire, because the dollar has to, you know, if the world's reserve currency, the empire rests on the dollar, right?
Yes, it does. And I think the way you put it is absolutely right, in the sense that the one thing that the U.S. government and every government, for that matter, needs is a means of financing its spending. And it does that through taxes, and it does it through issuing bonds, sometimes issuing bonds which another department of the government buys, like the central bank. But the point is that you cannot have a government with no money at all. And that is the thing that will finally drive governments to accept that there must be an alternative to a collapsing currency, because they've got no option. And the only thing they have got to stop the currency collapsing is gold reserves. And monetary gold in the hands of central banks will be mobilized in order to ensure that the state still has some means of paying the police, paying the military, paying the politicians, whatever. I mean, you know, you cannot have a government with no money. And that is the point which, you know, I think has to be understood. And that is why they will eventually go back to gold.
But Alistair, we have AOC here. We have politicians here that are convinced that the U.S. government has endless amounts of money. And it is printing endless amounts of money. It creates money out of nothing. It grows on trees here in America, you know. What are you talking about? The government doesn't. I can't. No, but seriously, I think most people can't get their head around the idea that America could be a country without any money to pay its military, to pay its police, to pay its social welfare, to give money to other nations, to, you know, to send our military around the world to beat the heck out of countries and force them to accept the dollar, so that we can keep on with this dollar, can't we, infinitely?
No, you can't, because eventually, you debase the currency to the point where you impoverish everybody. And what they've got left, they finally realize what's happening. It's not prices going up, it's the dollar collapsing. And mm-hmm. so they don't want dollars. And if nobody wants a dollar, then the dollar is completely worthless. You know, and that is the ultimate destination for what's happening at the moment. And I know it is an extraordinary thought that the US government and other governments will have no money under those circumstances. They will not be able to finance anything. I mean, I've seen this in Africa, and when the salaries of policemen go down in real terms simply because the money is going down the drain, then what happens is you a very good police force suddenly can only survive on corruption, and that then becomes, if you like, part of the mix of the complete mess of a government with unsound money. And the only option they then have, and there's all sorts of reasons why they don't want to do it, like if you put the dollar on an gold exchange standard, then you're going to improve the position of the Chinese and the Russians immensely, because they've got more gold. They've got lots of gold. I can see the military complex thinking, well, in terms of geopolitical strategy, that's the last thing we want. But if you've got no money, then you will be driven to rescue the situation. And the only rescue at the end of the day is not Bitcoin, none of that stuff. It is gold, which the central banks already own or say they own. And they will mobilize it. And they need to use the currency, the worthless currency or otherwise worthless currency, as the means of distributing gold-backed currency throughout the population. I mean, the distribution is already there. All they've got to do is utilize it.
But if you help us to understand how we could get to that point now. I mean, I know that we've got debt, and the federal deficit is growing just exponentially almost. You pointed out in December that the Fed had, I think, created 14% money growth in 2 weeks, which annualizes something over 360%. So, I mean, it seems to be at that point now, if you look at it on a chart, and you put it out in your letter, showing this sort of exponential growth. I mean, we saw a big inflection point with 2008, 2009, but now it's just going straight up off the charts. And but yet people don't seem to be alarmed by that. And it seems to me that the Federal Reserve may have changed, or that they may have changed their accounting of M1, M2. John Williams talks about how they've sort of backdated M1 to include some M2, perhaps to smooth it out, to make it look like it wasn't such a drastic increase. Do you know anything about that?
I haven't studied that in detail, but certainly it does look to me as if the rapid growth of M1 is something that, as far as the Fed is concerned, is something they want to keep undercover, as it were. They don't, they don't want public to be alarmed by what's going on mm-hmm. there. So I can see that. I'm sure they explain it with all sorts of technical gubbins, but I mean, quite honestly, it's simple. You know, M1 is increasing at an extraordinary rate. I mean, over the course of the last year, last calendar year, it was up like something like 70%. I mean, this is just extraordinary. It is appalling. Anyway, that is just part of the whole situation. And I have said before that a government which relies on the expansion of money, of the quantity of money, to finance the majority of its spending, the minority being through tax receipts, mm-hmm. is already on the path to hyperinflation. That's where we are. It's going to get worse in 2021. I mean, I'm just looking at the sort of mooted plans for, Biden's spending on trying to recover from the COVID thing and all the rest of it. Mm-hmm. And so far, if you look at this, in this current fiscal year, taking the Congressional Budget Office's estimate of the budget deficit for this fiscal year, adding on top the various programs and all the rest of it, we already have a budget deficit this year of over $5 trillion. Well, now, you know, this is leaving last year way behind. The deficit, you know, in the second half of last year, you're looking at about 2.7 trillion. Now, this is before we even get the new President Biden's spending on, you know, sort of, if you like, environmental things, you know, and investment in infrastructure. I mean, that all that's going to be pushed. And you can see that the hyperinflation of the money supply, which I described, is something that is going to continue into this year, and it will continue at a far greater pace as well. So this is at least to the destruction of the dollar. The time taken to get there, of course, is something we can argue about. Mm-hmm. But there's one thing that is, I think, very, very concerning, and that is that the Fed has been printing money with the express view originally. Funding the government is has been the second reason they're doing it. But originally, what they wanted to do was they wanted to inflate the price of assets. Mm-hmm. And the last person who did this was John Law 300 years ago, and we know what happened to him. Yeah. So, yeah, but this is happening on a global scale, Jay, and that, I think, is terribly concerning. Now, the lesson we got from John Law is that once the scheme starts to collapse, you know, the having sort of puffed up the bubble, in that case, the Mississippi bubble, in this case, the government bond bubble, even with negative yields around the world. Once that scheme starts collapsing, the currencies go with it, and they will go with it very, very rapidly once the slide starts. And the other thing is, you've got to look at the inflationary implications of all this sort of rescue spending. I mean, you know, people are going to be have credits into their bank accounts. They've already had, I think it's $400. They're going to have another, is it $1,400? No, they've had $600. They've got another $1,400. They have got you know, sort of special unemployment benefit of another $400 and so on. Now, all this, because they can't go out, is going to be accumulating in something which the economists will say is savings. But actually, what it is, it's a balance of income, which is far larger than they would actually like to hold. Now, as soon as they can do it, people will start reducing their balances back to something normal. Now, the effect of that is going to release something like $2.5 trillion of excess spending without any increase in production, because it takes time to get the production going, and also people are unemployed, so they're not producing. Mm-hmm. So you just imagine what the marginal effect is on prices of an extra, it's around about, I calculated it this morning, another 19% of GDP just being forced into the economy. I mean, the effect on prices is going to be extremely dramatic. Yeah. So whichever way you look at it, this is going to be a year when the Keynesian idea that you can actually reflate an economy and, you know, it's all going to be hunky-dory. People start buying the dollar again because the economic outlook is better. It's going to move interest rates up, which, you know, was a normalization. The Fed will be able to taper over the next, it may be in about 18 months' time. And we've got a roaring, you know, roaring 20s back again. It is a load of rubbish. And unfortunately, we're looking at a far, far worse obverse side of that coin.
Yeah, I think that our new Treasury Secretary, I think she was talking about tapering, but I don't see how that can happen. Alistair, let me ask you, you put a chart of the 10-year Treasury, and it seems to be rising, and fairly dramatically, at least, you know, compared to where it was. And I think you sort of, well, I think you showed a golden cross on the 10-year Treasury, suggesting that maybe interest rates are already starting to sniff out what you're talking about, the inflationary problem, and that it could actually get away from the Fed. And, you know, a lot of people say, well, if the interest rates start to rise, gold is going to be slammed down. You know, they think that, I remember just recently saying to someone, yeah, but I, you know, I'm old enough to remember the 70s when the Fed, when the interest rate really got away from the Fed and rates started to rise like crazy. But do you think that the markets are sort of sniffing out this inflation already? That you know, and who would want to buy treasuries anyway at zero real rates or negative real rates? But what are your thoughts about that? Do you think that rates are inevitably heading higher now?
Yeah, I mean, as you say, who would buy U.S. Treasuries? Well, I can tell you the Fed and nobody else virtually.
Yeah.
I mean, foreigners have been reducing their position, and that is likely to continue. So the Fed has not only got to fund the U.S. government deficit, it's also got to absorb the stock coming out of foreign hands. This is something that has been triggered, I think, by the weakness in the dollar as much as anything, plus mm-hmm. the fact that before the dollar started sliding, foreigners had something like $27 trillion worth of investments in dollar financial securities and cash, and about $8 trillion of that is cash. $6 trillion of that is cash. So you can see that once things sort of turn around and start going south, there is an awful lot of money to come out of the dollar. And that is the big problem. What the Keynesians are hoping is that they can reverse that by, you know, having a wonderful economy as a result yeah. of stimulation and so on and so forth. So you can see that there's the two diametrically opposed views, if you like, are that, you know, a rise in interest rates is indicating a good future, or a rising interest rate is indicating that the whole system is going to collapse if they go higher. I would add to your comment about the relationship between the gold price and interest rates, and that is that actually, if you look at it, the only thing that can happen is a rising gold price correlates with rising interest rates. Mm-hmm. And this is supported by the point you made about the 1970s. I mean, we went into the 1970s with the Fed funds rate looking at about 6%, something like that, and the gold price just under $36. We came out of it with the gold price at $850 and the Fed funds rate at 19%. So, you know, yeah. I mean, the answer really is quite simple. There are elements in that insofar as, and this is what Volcker managed to do, by raising interest rates sufficiently, you penalized people who held gold, because physical gold obviously pays no interest. Mm-hmm. You can lend gold and borrow gold just the same as you can with fiat currencies, which is a point, incidentally, which very few people seem to understand. But if you hold on to gold itself, it's like holding on to dollar notes. They don't pay anything in that basic form, you know, mm-hmm. you're holding cash essentially. But other than that, I mean, basically the correlation with gold is in rising interest rates, and gold will rise at the same time.
All right, Alistair, with just about less than 4 minutes left, I'd like you to just comment briefly on why you think Bitcoin is not suited to replace fiat money. What attributes do gold and silver have that Bitcoin doesn't have that makes them suited to be money, or at least for currencies to be gold substitutes?
I think there are two basic reasons behind this. Firstly, you need to have a form of money which is flexible, which is what gold is, because roughly half, or maybe slightly less than half, of above ground stocks we would call monetary gold. The rest of it's mm-hmm. in jewelry, industrial use, whatever. Mm-hmm. And if the economy, the global economy, requires more gold, then it is there. It comes from mine output, but it also comes through scrap. And if the price rises under those circumstances, then you'll find there will be a shift in emphasis on the use of gold from jewelry towards its monetary use. So, mm-hmm. You know, it is flexible. Now, the other, if you look at it from the Bitcoin side, there is no flexibility there whatsoever. Now, furthermore, you can't have an economy that works on the basis that the currency continues to rise and rise and rise and rise, because this is completely capped. There's no flexibility yeah. in Bitcoin at all.
Yeah.
The important point about it is that if you're going to manufacture anything and you need to allocate capital, monetary capital, other forms of capital to the manufacture of that thing. Now, if Bitcoin is the money behind your capital, what are you going to have to repay at the end of the project, say in 5 years? You know, it's the answer basically is that if Bitcoin is limited in the way it is and continues to be, then the price, you know, you're going to have to pay back so much more in real terms, measured in goods, at the end of the process than you are at the beginning. So that would drive the relative price of what you are making way down and basically make the whole project completely nonsensical. So, you know, it cannot work as money. It really is as simple as that. It can work as a store of value until you get to the point where you price it in gold. And you then ask some very deep questions about, do you really need Bitcoin? I mean, can it be priced in gold? We know it can be priced in fiat currency, but we're talking about something completely different.
Yeah,
that's, if you like, something for
yeah.
for another 6 months' time, perhaps.
If you could substitute gold for Bitcoin, I think there'd be... it'd be a different story. My engineer is telling me we have a little bit of time yet, a minute or so. You mentioned a number of signals that monetary collapse is increasingly likely. Could you comment on some of those?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at commodity prices, they're all through the roof. I think also that cryptocurrencies are signaling very, very clearly what's going on to the dollar. Now, having said that, a lot of the punters in the cryptocurrency sphere, I think they understand the basic story about relative supply, but they don't understand it to the extent that they realize that what's happening is actually that the dollar is going down. They realize that Bitcoin is going up or Ether is going up. And that's as far as their thinking at the moment goes. But it's a very, very small step for them to begin to realize that actually what's happening is that paper currencies are going down. And if you look at, stocks as well, I mean, they have been inflated.
Right.
So, I mean, virtually everything is going up. And when that happens, the one thing that is common is the currency is going down in terms of purchasing power.
Mm-hmm. That's what's driving it. All right. Yeah. Well, we'll have to leave it go at that. Alistair, thank you so much, as always, for your insights. Always very, very much appreciated. And we'll look to catch up with you again sometime soon, hopefully.
My pleasure.
All righty, folks. Well, that is it for this week. Next week, John Rubino will be my main guest. Dr. Quentin Henning will be with me to talk about, I think, a phenomenal new discovery by SK Mining. So I hope you'll join me next week. Until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Novo Resources Corp. trades on the OTCQX under the symbol NSRPF and on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol NVO. Its flagship assets are located in the Pilbara region of Western Australia. Novo has recently partnered with Sumitomo Corporation of Japan to evaluate, advance, and develop the company's Australian gold projects. With over $40 million in cash and $60 million committed from Sumitomo, Novo is well on its way to establishing itself as one of the top junior explorers and developers in Australia.